It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Just a second here. Issue going on with the stream. Check. 1, 2, 1, 2. I'll be at it in a second. I love it when the program begins with a problem. So let me know if you should happen to be listening to the Head On live stream. Let me check in the chat room here and see if anybody's hanging out there who can answer. By the way, chat room's a great place to hang out when the program's live Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific. Okay. So, if you pop by the chat room, you'll be greeted by early arrivers Bill and Anatole, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who has still not seen fit to fold space, even though he is a third stage guild navigator. Well, that's just fine. Some days just aren't space folding days. Okay, so I'm sending. Okay, headon.live is working. Thank you, Lee. Thank you. Thank you over on Twitter, Blue Hen. Thanks for letting me know this is all working. You know, some days are diamonds, some days are rocks. Mostly I get a rock. But hi, I'm Robin, and it is Titanic Tuesday on the horn. Of course, on Titanic Tuesday, we celebrate the Titanic intellects of the right wing. Barking and howling and grunting, full speed ahead into that iceberg. It can't be that hard. Yeah. And we got a good bit of it, too. So now that Brother DeCanesa tells me that everything's copacetic over on TuneIn, and I'm sending to the server, yeah, I guess there was just a little bit, I don't know, maybe some latency or something. I tried to start early. Never mind. But we're sending, and this is the 11th day of May, 2021. The program is live, and every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, this program not being any different than all the others, in which we begin the program with thanks to the people who make it possible for this program to continue its month-to-month tenuous existence. So thanks to Paul from Parts Unknown. Thank you to thank you very kindly to Chris, Christopher Chris. Thank you, John. Thank you, Tony and Chico. Thank you all so very much for being partial sponsors of the program. And, if you'd like to become a subscriber, it's very easy. It's going to set you back every bit of not quite a half a stick of chewing gum per program. That's not too bad at all. Considering considering the money that goes into producing the multimillionaire for-profit media. It may be more on them in a little bit. It is not more on. It is Titanic Tuesday. By the way, let's see here. Let's get the program started the way the program is supposed to start, shall we? And by that, I mean television's vast wasteland. Robin! It is Titanic Tuesday, and this country is in a real Titanic struggle. Robin, last night you and Todd were discussing a freaking woman that had just been interviewed down in the Villages in Florida. Stupid woman had just departed the Mutt Gates and Spuds McKenzie, a.k.a. Marjorie Traitor Green Cucumber Rally. The Gates Green doggerel really had about 100 attendees, and they all proclaimed that Donald Trump was still president, including the stupid woman. The stupid woman said she heard the news on television, so it must be true. Gee, I wonder which network she watches. But the problem, I will add editorially, is it's not there's not just one name anymore. There's, of course, Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, but there's also Newsmuck, where, and it's Newsmuck, was it not, where we had some confusion over how dandelions propagate. Yeah, yeah. And then, of course, there's ONAN, the network that spills its news upon the ground. So there's any number of possibilities there, Joey and Giraffe. And Giraffe, by the way, just foxtrotted in. So the stupid woman obviously watches Fox, and after listening to the Foxhounds, Mutt Gates and Spuds McKenzie Marjorie down in the Villages, her pathetic, misguided opinion has not changed. Ironically, on this date in 1961, Newton Minow, former chair of the FCC, declared television to be a vast wasteland. Newton Norman Minow is still alive at 95, and if only he knew just how much of a vast wasteland television would become with the introduction of Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda. The jobs report was not good, as Robin mentioned last night, and that's not surprising, considering so many of these jobs pay so little that nobody can afford to work them, literally. If you take into account transportation to and from work, not to mention the cost of child care, who can go to work? Who can afford to? Yeah, so true. Jeffrey, in fact, has his own jobs report.
Yes, it appears that many of the insurrectionists who were caught scaling the walls of the Capitol can't get jobs because they've been charged with a felony. Yes, the poor little insurrectionists are going crazy just sitting at home watching Fox because they can't find a job. Many of them have been seen. Wait for it. Yes, many of the insurrectionists are going crazy watching Fox all day and not having a job. Yes, they're so uptight that they've been seen climbing the walls.
God, yes. We'll keep it short today because Gussolini's wife, Mother Goose, just stopped by the South Garage with the Goslings. Mother Goose is still limping a little, but appears to be getting better. This has been Joey's Journal for Titanic Tuesday, the 11th day of May, with Giraffe watching Walt Disney's film The Fox and the Hound. And so there's a Fox and the Hound challenge for $10 on the table. That would knock us down to $880 to go to help us come up even. So that's today, yesterday, and Friday that we're trying to fund now. Aw, Jeffrey and Joey included a photograph of Mother Goose and her goslings. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Sitting there happily pecking away into the grass, I guess, looking for worms or something. I don't know what. Do geese eat worms? I don't know. And we even have our next-door neighbors have 4 ducks. And occasionally they will gift me with a few duck eggs. Ferg loves nothing better than a sunny-side-up duck egg. I fixed him that with his crab cakes the other night. But lately, we've been getting flyovers and occasional visits, even from some geese. Because even at its loudest, a duck does not sound like a goose, and a goose does not sound like a duck. And I think they've been visiting the ducks, because the ducks have a little kiddie pool there that they splash around in, and apparently the geese can spot just about any body of water, including a kiddie pool, from their aerial view. It's kind of neat, though.
Huh?
Yes, absolutely. Billable Rick says, cowbell for Joey's cute photo of the Goosellinis and their brood. Yes, absolutely. Okay, now, it being Titanic Tuesday, where to begin? Let's see, it was a bad day to be Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, getting himself twice embarrassed in the Senate in one day. And it was also a bad day to be, because, of course, Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, and that thing on his head. Every day is a good day to wish a happy day to Rand Paul's neighbor. And thank you for your patriotic service to the country. And then there's a new Titanic intellect who tried to tangle with Dr. Fauci today and did poorly. I don't know. Billable Rick says, do the geese have to pay $3.50 a day for visitors parking as shown in that photo? Well, no, I think they keep moving, so they're not technically parked. You know, if you sit there and the engine's running, you have it technically parked. And no, I don't know. No, I just don't. Here at the mansion, it finally got a little bit nice today. We saw some blue skies and temperatures crawled up above the 60-degree mark. Someday we'll feel what 70 feels like. Maybe next week or something. I don't know. But like I said, where to begin? It's the great toilet paper freak-out redux in the eastern United States. Over across the river, the Rippy Mart I go to, because I don't visit the Rippy Mart I used to visit when after the dude stuck his tobacco crumb-covered tongue out at me and coughed, unmasked, you know, COVID-iot mask hole. Probable Trump voter. No. So I go all the way across the river to get my gas. And they got 12 pumps there. They got 12 pumps, and when I pulled in there today, because my gas tank had just gotten low, 11 out of 12 were in use and people standing in line. I never see that, even during the height of tourist season here. I never see that. But there it was today, because people are panic buying gasoline now, and there were reports across the Southeast, you know, places like South Carolina Stan, because of course, North Carolina Stan, here in West Virginia, other states in the Southeast, people panicking and running out and buying all the gasoline they can carry because of the cyber attack, ransomware shutdown of the Colonial Pipeline. Because the Georgia Corporation that runs the Colonial Pipeline had such shabby internet security that they were able to be hacked and ransomed. Nice. And so here, where I live, over in Oak Hill, there were stations already out of gas. They did still have gas at the Rippy Mart where I stopped. They won't for very long, because we are panicky primates. This is the functional equivalent of 3 million years ago, us chirping and chittering and howling and barking at each other and grunting that there was a lion walking around underneath our trees. Sometimes human evolution just doesn't seem like it's quite as big a deal as we would like to hope. The news account I saw came from the Daily News, the New York Daily News. Long lines began forming at gas stations across the East Coast this week as panicked drivers worry about supply shortages and higher prices. Following the shutdown of the Colonial Pipeline, a major U.S. fuel artery that was hit by a cyber attack over the weekend. Photos and videos shared on social media showed drivers lining up for gas in the Carolinas, Georgia, and other states in the Southeast. Many stations have run out of gas entirely or only have premium, which is like running out of gas because who can afford premium? Yashika Wiggins of Marion, South Carolina, said, "It was unbelievable. When I was driving today, I thought it was a catastrophe coming. I've seen all these cars waiting, and I was like, OMG, I have to fill my tank up." Yep. The Dark Side is the outfit that hacked the pipeline. And they're hoping, the Colonial folks are, to be back in operation by the end of the week. But people are in... a dire, I think we just look for a reason to panic, don't we? And of course, as Randy in PA reminds me, the industrial processing industries employ, in addition to server computers, actual controllers called PLCs, programmable logic controllers. Stuxnet was the original PLC attack on Iran's PLCs. Backdoors are double-edged swords. They can be used to harm an enemy, but once used, they can be analyzed and turned around onto the original attacker. Because there are backdoors built into all operating systems. No, says Lamar the Magnificent, they had Trump Security, the private oil supplier, using top-notch Trump Security systems, which, you know, anything with the Trump name on it will, fail. And Silent R. Lamar the Magnificent is absolutely right in that regard. Pipeline hack. Greetings, Robin. Greetings, Steve in New York. And to think, if we had solar-powered cars, this wouldn't happen. Nobody could hack dear Sol. Yeah. The sun. Oh, I know. Or wind, you know? Kind of hard to hack the wind, too. But I don't think sail-powered cars are anywhere in our future. Darn the luck. But, you know, because panicking. So there we go. Jesus. It's kind of embarrassing, isn't it? No, it's a lot embarrassing. So we got that. And, of course, it's the Southeast, so the vast majority of the people doing the panicking are people who, coincidentally, also, you know, voted for the former guy, right? But I had a note to begin shortly before the program. May I digress again? Ron in Raleigh writes, Human Rights Watch has just submitted a 213-page report, which states that Israel has turned the corner and has become a full-fledged apartheid state. Taking that into consideration, do you think that if asked, Senator Tim Scott would say that Israel is a racist country? Since the Republican Party is even more in the thrall of the Israeli government, I believe it would be almost impossible for any Republican and most Democrats to state the fact of Israeli racism. I wonder if the U.S. will ever come to grips with treatment of the Palestinian people. Israel is aiming for the total erasure of the Palestinian people, and we will sit on our hands until it's done. Israel is being praised for its program to vaccinate its population. No one mentions that they are not vaccinating the Palestinian people, over whom they have complete occupational control. I guess I'll have to look at the Israeli treatment of the Palestinian people like the Biden administration does and not see the racism. Yeah, it was a bad day over at the State Department today. A very bad day. The spokesperson for the State Department is a guy named named Price, Ned Price. And in his briefing, and to the Biden administration is the credit, we're doing briefings again at the State Department. And Ned Price, for the very life of him, could not bring himself to condemn the Israelis killing, what was it, 24 people overnight? And 9 of them children? Because freedom? Is that it? Is that how it works? But, to their credit, and Ron in Raleigh mentions, it would be almost impossible for any Republican and most Democrats to state the fact of Israeli racism. Well, we do have Wisconsin's Mark Pocan, who declared, "We cannot just condemn rockets fired by Hamas and ignore Israel's state-sanctioned police violence against Palestinians, including unlawful evictions, violent attacks on protesters, and the murder of Palestinian children." Not quite the same as saying that the Israeli state is racist or an apartheid state, but calling the killing of the children murder is, as bizarre as it sounds to say, a positive step forward. Ilhan Omar, Representative Ilhan Omar of Minnesota, said, "This unsurprising response is devoid of empathy and concern for human suffering," talking about Ned Price. And it really was kind of cringeworthy.
We're speaking of the principle of self-defense.
I'm asking if you think that the principle of self-defense applies to the retaliatory the airstrikes that they're conducting in response.
Matt, this is a very fluid situation. I would hesitate to comment on operations beyond, you know, the rocket fire that is clearly targeting innocent civilians in Israel. So I would hesitate to speak to specific
operations. See, that's a goddamn lie. That right there is a straight up, no kidding, unvarnished, unflyblown lie. The rocket attacks launched by Hamas, and this is not an endorsement of them, but merely a simple statement of facts, those rockets are unguided. They cannot aim them in more than the most general of senses. It goes back to that whole, the rocket goes up, who cares where it comes down, it's not my concern, says Wernher von Braun. Remember that little ditty? Well, yes, they shot the rockets. And over time, and the history of these rocket attacks has proven that they're not very effective because they're all homemade and shit. Hamas did take responsibility for a rocket attack in Jerusalem. But to say that they were deliberately targeting Israeli civilians is a stretch. They can't say that they who they were targeting at all, because they are untargetable.
Airstrikes that they're conducting in response.
Matt, this is a very fluid situation. I would hesitate to comment on operations beyond, you know, the rocket fire that is clearly targeting innocent civilians in Israel. So I would hesitate to speak to specific operations that have just occurred. But the broader principle of self-defense is something we stand by on behalf of Israel.
Yeah, but do you think that Israeli military response to the rockets coming in, a military response to the rockets coming in is covered by this broader rubric of self-defense, right?
Self-defense often does authorize the use of force.
Thank you, Matt. I want to ask you about East Jerusalem, but let's talk about what you said about the principle.
I mean, there's self-defense, and there's self-defense. There's the self-defense that the Israelis get to have, and then there's the self-defense that the Palestinians don't get to have.
Self-defense. Does that in any way apply to the Palestinians? Do they have a right to self-defense?
No.
Do Palestinians have a right to self-defense?
Broadly speaking, Saeed, we believe in the concept of self-defense. We believe it applies to any state.
There's a problem there. We believe it applies to any state.
There is not a Palestinian state. We would, some of us would like for there to be a Palestinian state. Some of us believe in the two-state solution. But the Gaza and the West Bank are entirely and completely under Israeli police and military occupation. There is no way for a Palestinian state to exercise self-defense. And regardless of how where one comes down in this debate, when you're using a false narrative, you're not contributing in any way, shape, form, or fashion to making the situation better. Nonetheless, Ned Price soldiered weaselly on.
I don't think that. I certainly wouldn't want my words to be construed as...
I understand. I want to ask you...
Yeah, he wouldn't want his words to be construed as suggesting that the Palestinians have a right of self-determination. That's what he wouldn't want his... No! And yet, I would be remiss if I did not point out that there's actually more nuance in this response than there was in the four nightmare years of the maladministration of Nitwit Nero.
I don't want to harp on this either, but, you know, the Israelis killed 13 people just now, you know, including maybe five or six children. You can,
yeah, that would be nine.
Condemn that? You can condemn the killing of children?
Said,
I'm asking, do you condemn the killing of Palestinian children?
Obviously.
Wow, it's just not it's going to be an eight martini dinner for Ned Price at the end of the yeah.
Obviously, and these reports are just emerging, and I understand, I was just speaking to the team, I understand we don't have independent confirmation of facts on the ground yet, so I'm very hesitant to get into reports.
He can't even say on general principle it's wrong to kill Palestinian children. Try it. It's you can say it, and you know what? You will not be in any sort of moral hazard doing so. It's not okay to kill Palestinian children. Asleep in their beds. We would have no problem saying that it's not okay for Palestinians to kill Israeli children asleep in their beds. What if you're not going to call it racism, what else are we going to call it? Bigotry? I mean, this seems to be the very classic definition of racism. Hard not to. But still, Ned Price couldn't quite find his way clear.
Are just emerging. Obviously, the deaths of civilians, be they Israeli or Palestinians, are something we would take very seriously.
We would take very seriously. Notice the verb tense. It's not active. It's not present. It's somewhere in the future, under some circumstance, the United States would take slaughtering Palestinian children very seriously. But he can't even say Palestinian children without saying Israeli children. I hate stories that touch on Israel. I despise them because there's no solution. And everybody gets all burned up about it. And there's no right answer. And it's just an ongoing horror in which the United States continually and perpetually embarrasses itself by groveling over because of religious fetishization, by the way, religious fetishization of a tiny strip of land on the Mediterranean Levant. It's sad, and it is. It's embarrassing. $3 billion every year of our money we send in military aid. We're not talking about humanitarian aid. We're not talking about feeding people. We give $3 billion of free money to Israel every year for stuff that they can use to kill Palestinian children and Palestinian mommies and Palestinian daddies and Palestinian grandpas and Palestinian grannies and aunties and uncles and cousins and neighbors. Shouldn't we be able to just cut them loose? I mean, they've been a state for 73 years. They've got one of the highest standards of living in the world for their citizenry. Palestinians, of course, are in an open-air concentration camp called Gaza. You'd think they could stand on their own by now, especially if they want to be an apartheid pariah state. And, of course, the Israeli Supreme Court, part of the unrest here is that the Israeli Supreme Court is getting ready to give the imprimatur of its approval to dispossessing some more Palestinians in East Jerusalem. But part of the problem that accompanies all of this is the fact that some people won't even, to this day, acknowledge that Palestinians are actually a separate and distinct minority. And that's mind-boggling. And they blather on. I heard some Israeli, I think he was a strategic advisor or something to the psychopath Bibi Netanyahu. And he said something about, we have to look back to, who originally had title of the land. Well, motherfucker, if that is the case, then you're not in the best of situations, because even the book of Genesis acknowledges that the original inhabitants of the land where Hierosolima is now, Jerusalem, were not the children of Israel at all. Abram was born in Ur of the Chaldees. That means Abram was actually an Iraqi. And went wandering and followed his goats and his sheep and whatever until they got into, according to myth, what is modern-day Israel. And throughout the epic history of that poor blood-soaked benighted region, any title that Israel has to that land is by some sort of barbarian right of conquest. And they rest on it to this day. And we just sit here abasing ourselves, embarrassing ourselves, when the solution is fairly simple. You pick up the phone, President Biden, you say, get me that bloodthirsty little psychopath, Bibi Netanyahu, on the phone. And you say, Bibi, Joe, listen, stop this or I'm turning off the spigot. Stop it right now. Not another one. Or no more $3 billion a year. Your choice. And you know what Israel would say? Okay, stop the money. And then they would begin a lobbying effort against anybody who doesn't kiss Bibi's hairy little toe. That's fact. Let's let Ned continue to flounder for another minute or so.
Okay.
You're going to know as soon as I read what your answer was that there's a big problem with it. You said, well, not a problem, it just doesn't answer the question. We believe that it, meaning the right to self-defense, applies to any state.
Oops.
Well, you see the problem, right? Yes?
Do you want to?
Do you regard Palestine as a state?
I wasn't referring.
Do you think that? You don't, in the context of the ICC and the UN. So are you saying that you do not if it applies to any state, are you saying the Palestinians don't have a right to self-defense?
I was making a broader point not attached to Israel or the Palestinians in that case.
So they do have a right to self-defense.
Matt, I'm not in a position to debate the legalities from up here. What our message is one of de-escalation.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. How do you do that? How do you de-escalate? On the one side, you have police forces with the most advanced weaponry in the world, and on the other side, you have teenagers with rocks. Who de-escalates? It's a horrible issue. Like I said earlier, there is no solution. And I told you that I'd piss somebody off, and I have. I should know better than to stay, but I can't stay away from this issue because it is a moral issue. Because I believe that children the world around have the right to go to sleep in their beds at night and wake up in the morning not dead. That applies to Palestinian children, Israeli children, Korean children, Chinese children, Fijian children, Indian children, Yemeni children, Saudi children. Children the world over. But I've pissed off a dear friend of the program. I object, says Andy the Angry Jew. As a longtime fan and supporter of the show, I think you're unusually harsh on Israel. I'm Jewish and defend Israel's right to exist. I have never questioned Israel's right to exist. I do not think you present the other side very accurately. I'm a big fan of the show, but I think it borders on anti-Semitic. I'm sorry you think that. I have attacked and denounced anti-Semitism wherever I have seen it, and as often as I have seen it. It sickens me. It sickens me in my country. It sickens me in others. I hear no defense of Israel and the fact that the Palestinians never wanted agreement at all. Well, I'm not going to say that the Palestinians never wanted agreement at all, because that's not true. Many times Arab leaders have declined because they knew their people would kill them. Finally, that's true. Anwar Sadat reached out at the urging of Jimmy Carter, the most decent and Christian man ever to occupy the White House up until Joe Biden, who is challenging Carter's status as such. But Anwar Sadat was stone cold murdered for trying to make peace with Israel. And then, of course, who was it? Chuck Rabin? Was it Rabin? Who was murdered by one of his own? For saying that history is written in blood and it is time for humanity to find a different color to write with? They killed him deader than a stump. How do you deal with people that want to see the Jewish people marched into the oceans? Andy asks. And that, of course, is a mistranslation. First of all, it's a mistranslation. It is not the Jewish people, and it's not the Israelis. When that statement was made by, you know, an Iranian theocratic maniac. I don't have any problem saying that. I was calling down a pox on both houses with Yemen and Saudi Arabia just last night. From the, and I am no Christian, but there is a passage in the Christian New Testament that says, for all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. And I suppose that could be applied to any of the Abrahamic, any of the three, more or less, Abrahamic religions, the monotheisms. They're all rife with problems. But an Iranian maniac said that, and he didn't say the Jewish people, he did not say the Israelis, he said the Zionist regime.
and Zionist regime is not the same thing as the Israeli people and is certainly not the same thing as Jewish people the world over. And it is not a distinction without a difference. Israel is in the grips of a hardcore, merciless, remorseless, relentless, racist, apartheid regime. Bibi Netanyahu, his Likudnik right-wing pals, and the other minor parties that ally with him. Andy continues and says, it's your show, but I will tell you it does affect me and my thoughts about donating. What's wrong with the rest of the Arab world? There's not enough room. You know, I can say the same thing about my status here in Appalachia. My people have been here. We came here. We stole it from the indigenous people, dirty and unfair and unsquare. Why do I have to be the one who leaves? Because some godforsaken coal companies come in and using the effective equivalent of 22 Tomahawk cruise missiles at a time on a hill two ridges over from me that fills the air with poison. Well, and if you are a longtime listener to this program, you know that I have said I've fielded questions on a number of occasions. Well, why don't you just leave? And my question is always, and go where? Who's going to welcome the hillbillies? Who wants the bumpuses? I've also said over the years that I feel, based on where I live and what this place is subjected to, I feel a greater sense of kinship with any oppressed people than I do most of the prosperous industrialized world. Why can't the Palestinians leave somewhere that they've been living damn near forever? I mean, let's make things clear. In the days that are written of in the New Testament, there were people who were not Jewish living in Greater Palestine. Lots of them. I guess and in the early formative years of Islam, the Quran is specific in saying that one does not mistreat the other peoples of the book. And I'm only going on the evidence that exists. I mean, first of all, I think using a barbarian holy book, regardless of who the barbarians that authored it were, for answers to 21st century problems is probably not a good idea. As Albert Einstein said, an eye for an eye and the world goes blind, or was that Gandhi? Maybe, I think it was Einstein who said, I do not know how World War III will be fought, but I do know how World War IV will be fought with sticks and stones. Well, the Palestinians are fighting with sticks and stones, and they are opposed with the most advanced lethal weaponry on Earth. It's not exactly a fair fight. And I think Ned Price there at the Department of State, he is a paid professional spokesperson, and he knows how to wiggle around a toxic question. Certainly not saying Israel doesn't have a right to exist. And Andy, I hope you don't, we've been friends too long. I hope you don't think I am. I am saying, however, that a nation as rich and prosperous as Israel is probably doesn't need our $3 billion. We're not giving it to them for food. We're not starving. If Israel was starving, I'd be the first to say, "Good God, load up the ships, put on the big bags of wheat and rice, and ease the starvation." I support butter, not guns. But that's not who we are. What's wrong with the rest of the Arab world? There's not enough room. Why do the Palestinians have to be the ones who leave home? Because they lost? Is that it? They lose the right to exist even? Long time ago, I remember the late, great Bart Kopp said we should make an offer, Israel or Palestine. Hey, you can have Oklahoma. We've been giving Oklahoma away, and we didn't have it to give away because Bart Kopp lived in Oklahoma. And you can move everybody to Oklahoma and live in peace. But Bart's complaint was that both sides, and this is true, there is some genuine both-siderism here. Both sides were committed to their blood-soaked, sacred, holy sand and would rather die there than live somewhere else. Again, there is no solution. And I regret even talking about this. Andy says, I surely cannot be the only person listening that needs to come to the defense of Israel, and if not, then shame on the audience. No, I'll not have this community shamed. And I'm wondering, this is not the Israeli people. The Israeli people did not vote 100% for a psychopath running their country. Not just a psychopath, but a crook, too. Bibi Netanyahu is the nearest thing to Richard Nixon that Israel has ever had. Crooked as a dog's hind leg. And a murderous psychopath into the bargain. This is not cultural. This is not social. This is a deliberate, chosen political position by the worst kind of human being. Bibi Netanyahu and his revolting right-wing Likudniks are the functional political equivalent of the Marjorie Taylor Greens and the Clanny Oakley Lauren Boberts and the Matt Gaetzes of our country and the Marine Le Pens of France. And whoever the current asshole running things is running the right wing in Germany or Geert Wilders in the Netherlands, and they're all toxic, and they're all homicidal maniacs. And frankly, I'm trying to figure when you consider the time and energy that goes into the defense of Israel. Why do I need to be the one who does that? They got plenty. And the problem with all of this is that no matter how many 213-page reports Human Rights Watch authors, as Mayella Yule said, it don't come to nothing. Andy continues and says, it cannot be all agreeing all the time, and if so, then maybe it's time for me to move on. Let's give some equal time to the Jewish people. This is not about the Jewish people. I have never said a cross word against the Jewish people. I never will. In many ways, I'm damn near a Hebraophile. I revere that culture. But again, this is not social or cultural. This is political. Was it Mao who said that war is politics at the muzzle of a gun? Andy says, there's a lot of hate in your voice, and I don't like it. Will you air this thought? I just have. And there's no hate in my voice. I despise the idea of murdering children for a goddamn political philosophy. I do. I despise that, and I will not hide from it. And, Andy, your problem's not with me. There's tens of thousands of Israelis who Israeli publications that are far more hard on the right-wing apartheid Likudniks than I could ever be. And that's a fact. The Jewish people in the United States are split on the Palestinian question. Good God, there are Orthodox Jews in both the United States and Israel who argue that Israel does not, and they argue it, not me. There are Orthodox, ultra-Orthodox Jews who argue that Israel does not have a right to exist because it is not blessed by the great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky. There's no good answer to this miserable question. But when I see reports of children murdered for politics, there is some portion of me that cannot be silent. Must not be silent. The world broke the South African apartheid regime. And having seen that before, well, the hard right wing, and I will say the F word, fascist Israeli government has waged a nonstop campaign to make sure that even the most tepid criticism of Israel is not tolerated, and particularly of Israel's awful right-wing government. And I will not shy from the fact that Israel's government is right-wing, fascist, and awful. And I also will not accept the intellectually dishonest, disingenuous argument that to criticize Israel is anti-Semitism, because it is not. Brother Deacon Asa pointing out, Bibi's family came to Israel from Belarus. He's playing from the same playbook that was eventually handed down to huggable Vlad Putin. To equate Bibi with the Jewish people is as misleading as saying Trump is the American people. Ooh. God, that makes my liver quiver just to think about it. Answering some of the questions, Steve in New York says, Netanyahu, I fancy that a better comparison is P.W. Botha from apartheid South Africa. Yeah, I'd say so. That's fair. Shorty in L.A. responding, just the facts, Robin. FYI, that $3 billion a year is illegal, because it is illegal to fund any country that has not signed the IMF treaty. Ned Price just said he cannot speak where he's at. America is the only country on planet Earth who still has not ratified the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child. Dang, it's only been 30 years. America knows damn well that these images are true. The meaning of wipe Israel off the map. It brings tears to me every time. And Shorty provides an image. And it's out there. It's a it's a map that shows 1947, then the UN plan in 1947, then the reality of 1947 to 1949 to 1967, and then 2005. If anybody's being wiped off the map, it becomes abundantly clear that it's the Palestinian people. Because the area, the Levant, Palestine in 1947, was almost entirely Palestinian. In 2005, the green that is used to delineate Palestinian settlements is almost entirely gone. Genocide is wrong in any form, against any people. And the and you know, this political theory, not social, not cultural, this political theory that says that if we apply sufficient pressure, eventually Arab states will say, well, y'all can just stop being Palestinians and come be Saudis. You think a Palestinian person wants to go and live under the fucking Wahhabi religious police? How about Iran? Oh, that's fun. What if there are actual dreams within the Palestinian people of setting up a viable, vibrant democracy? Ooh. What if they don't want to be Jordanians? What if they don't want to be Syrians? Ooh, there's a place that I wouldn't want to send anybody to. How about Iraqis? You know, the Palestinians can turn around and do what Abram did and go to Ur of the Chaldees, Iraq. Just in a different direction, and everybody can be happy. So, Andy, I hope I have fairly and God knows I have earnestly tried to answer your questions. I have never and will never challenge Israel's right to exist. I have no ability to impact its right to exist. But I will never challenge it, because there is a right to exist. There were better solutions in 1947, 1948, but we don't get to time travel. And so this is where we are. And this is the perpetual thorn in humanity's side, and will be as long as Israel is controlled by right-wing fascist thugs. And Bibi Netanyahu is that, and does not have a desire an equal desire to see Palestinian children wake up in the morning that they have for their own children. I can't make it any more simple than that. A pox upon anyone. Anyone who hurts children. From the legislature of Alabama to the Knesset of Israel, to whatever the goddamn religious police are in Afghanistan or Yemen or Saudi Arabia. I should think we could sign on to that, all of us, in a hot minute. Ron and Raleigh points out the Israel, that is not the Israel. The Israel of today is not the Israel that the British and Americans stole from the Palestinians with the Treaty of Balfour, the Balfour Declaration. stealing land at a breakneck pace. They're now trying to steal all the land around Jerusalem because Donald Trump moved our fucking embassy to a city that had been a holy city to both or all three religions. There can be no two-state solution when the Israelis have stolen all the land. The old trope of calling anyone that has a problem with Israeli policy as anti-Semite is bullshit. I'm tired of anyone that has a one-sided view of what Israel is doing. Why don't all the Russian Jews go home? Oh, geez. No. We don't. No, Ron. No. I didn't censor your statement, but telling anybody to go home, we live on home. There's no planet B. Eventually, Elon Musk will fill up his Mars spaceships with indentured servants to make him, to provide him with a luxurious life on Mars. Or maybe the children of Elon Musk or what have you. But we can't tell anyone on the planet to go home because they already are. Seems obvious to me. I mean, Israel could make their case a lot easier. For instance, by busting ass, for instance, to see that the Palestinians are vaccinated as well as the Israelis. That has not happened. Also, is not going to happen. And it's remarkably short-sighted because of the nature of the virus. The virus doesn't know if you're Palestinian or Israeli. It just spreads. So is the hope that by maintaining a strict separation of the peoples that somehow or another, that if it goes wild in Gaza, as it has, say, gone wild in India, that it won't cross into Israel proper? Mike in Cascadia responding. Conflating criticism of the Israeli government's apartheid of the Palestinians to anti-Semitism is flat out wrong. I agree. Flavio says nobody's challenging Israel's right to exist, but the Balfour Declaration was the beginning of the problem. The Brits betrayed the Palestinians. Ever hear of Lawrence of Arabia? He sympathized with the Palestinians and was horrified with Britain's betrayal of them. Mm-hmm. At the end of the First World War, T.E. Lawrence was absolutely incensed to see what was done in the aftermath of the war. Pico was the French... The British and the French sat down and just started drawing lines on a map that had nothing to do with the people who lived there. They were just carving up the old Ottoman Empire. Because Turkey aligned with the Germans lost, that meant Turkey lost, and don't forget the oil. And as for a pox on those who harm children... Steve in New York says, as a Catholic, I will sadly feel the obligation to name the Curia of Rome. Oh, there's plenty to go around. Ron in Raleigh says, that was sarcasm. Thank you for clarifying that. I was just answering Andy's statement about how Palestinians should just leave, just to call out how wrongheaded that statement was and is. Okay, thank you for the clarification, Ron. Nobody's being pushed into the sea. And even the people who said push into the sea said it about the Zionist government, not about the Israeli people. So, there's that. Let's see. Someone has been on hold for rather a long time on the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing, Robin?
I'm good.
This is Georgia. I haven't called in a while.
Oh, it has been a while. So nice to hear from you.
Well, I'm glad you're pleased. You hear me okay?
Yeah, I got you good. You're coming through loud and clear.
Okay. I was going to just touch on this subject. You know, the Israeli government has been very good with propaganda, making critiques of a nation state equal to criticizing Jews everywhere or in the diaspora, you know? And I want to talk to the person whoever wrote that to you. When you criticize a state, like if I'm criticizing America, I'm not criticizing all of the American people, as diverse as that group is. And when you're criticizing Israel and their policies, you're not criticizing Jewish people. You know, you're criticizing a state. And I said to myself when I read, I don't know if it was last week or the week before, Bibi couldn't form a government. I knew
some shit was going to hit the fan.
Shit was going to hit the fan so he could, you know, get people behind him to form this government. And sure enough, here it is. Now, you don't know what people are willing to do in the background. He could have people he pays. I don't know. But every time, I guarantee you, you look at the last 10 years, every time Bibi is trying to put together a government to win an election outright, and when he has a problem, then there's a flare-up somewhere, somehow. And then he's able to pull together a coalition. You know, these stunts, and I'm not on the ground, so I can't, you know, this is my opinion, just based on a pattern of behavior from Bibi, that I'm making these assumptions, you know, but I'm going to say I don't know officially. But this, you know, this is his modus operandi. This is the way he operates. He has a problem. He can't put together a government, can't get that coalition together. Then bow, you know, either some rockets or it's something is going to happen to scare the people, to push them to make a government with him. And it's, you know, the last three elections, I think, at least, maybe. He's been in office for so long. Anyway, to that person, I just want you to just, you know, take a deep breath. Don't take it personally. Israel, it's a big boy. It's playing on the national stage, and it's not above reproach as a country. Just like the U.S.,
right.
Just like the U.K., any other government. And it is, but the propaganda has been very effective. No one wants to say anything for fear that they may be shamed or labeled anti-Semitic. And so that's why you get the tap dancing answer that you get, you know. So anyway, that's my little, you know, add-on to this conversation. Israel, you know, it's a country. Country, people live in countries. And no country is above reproach or critique. And I think right now with the pandemic, and I think the world is going through a shift, and we don't know how it's going to turn out. Are the old guards going to win? I mean, what we're going through in the U.S. right now with the right-wingers, it's really serious. And there is no guarantee that democracy is going to win here.
No, let me co-sign what you just said, because there is a global struggle against global fascism that is every bit as momentous, absent the bullets and bombs, as the last global struggle against global fascism. Because anytime you're struggling, anytime you're engaged against fascism, you are literally in the most
profound of existential struggles. And I also want to agree with you, and because I too was seeing the stories last week about, you know, Bibi can't form a government, Bibi can't form a government. And I was riding in the car, and I thought, well, there'll be some shit starting soon. And sure enough, I mean, that's cynical, but it's hard to avoid those kind of conclusions when there is a history of pattern and practice that says that's exactly how this game is played, or at least how he plays it.
Yes. The last time we spoke, I said something like, we were talking about Trump, and I said, if you're downtrodden, or something to this effect, if you're a downtrodden person, like we were talking about kids in cages or whatever it is, no one is coming to help you. If these vile people ever get control of the United States and other wealthy countries, and these people have history, whether they went to school together, their parents know each other, no one is coming to help you or save you if they ever get control. People look at what's going on in Arizona, what's going on in Georgia. We're just not used to it, but we're being inundated every day. We're being attacked. And these people aren't stopping, and no one has the mechanism to make them stop.
Well, that's the problem with fascism. Fascism never stops. Fascism has to be stopped and has to be affirmatively crushed. I mean, we crushed the bejesus out of it in 1945, and yet here we are. Because the people who learned those lessons of 1945, that generation died off, and so it's back. Because there's always a core cadre that sort of runs in the shadows, runs under the radar, and then slowly builds back. And in the world in which we live, Georgia, the person advancing that, for the most part, has been Vladimir Putin. Because he's got all the authoritarian strains of an old Soviet bully. But he doesn't like the old Soviet model. He likes the muscularity of fascism, because fascism is masculine and muscular. And he's helped spread it around the globe. It's why it has the purchase that it has in the United States now. He's funded it in France. He's funded it in the UK. He's funded it in Germany. And it inures to his benefit. I don't guess they call themselves fascist. I mean, they're still calling themselves the Chinese Communist Party, per that what I was talking with Todd about last night. But authoritarianism is authoritarianism. And the Chinese are actively involved in trying to make the global argument that democracy is weak, democracy doesn't work, democracy can't even handle a virus. And look what we can do, and people are mostly happy.
Okay. All right. Okay. As far as the authoritarianism and Putin, there are people here throughout the world who are ready to be his feudal lords, wherever they are in the world. They have no problems living with the corruption, so long as they get to live high on the hog, as they say. And they don't care how many people are starving. They don't care how many people have absolutely nothing. And I just don't think people understand what's really going on here, and no one is really sounding the alarm. But I think we're at this pivotal moment where we can either, like you say, slide into fascism and authoritarianism, or birth the age of cooperation. People forget humanity got where it is in cooperation. But with capitalism, we're so focused on competition, competition, competition.
Yes.
But capitalism as a mean, and it means and through trade and delivery, we can raise everyone's or most people's standard of living.
Yeah.
But that is really, I think that's the undergirding fight right there. The democratization of capitalism and distribution of resources versus absolute, an iron fist over production and resources. That's where we are. And maybe we're in the early stages, but that's what I feel.
It feels like it, because the reason people, you know, is if people are not failing to go back to work because there's all these great jobs out there and they're just laying around. It pissed me off to no end. I caught some of my filthy morning habit today, and I heard the millionaires bandying the question of whether it was the $1,400 stimulus and the unemployment compensation that's keeping people home. And you know, we were hearing that from from Precious Lindsay months ago, and now it has some sort of currency in the current debate, and that just drives me crazy. Because, really, $1,400, and that's why, and one-time payment, and $300 extra in unemployment a month, and that's why you won't go to bullshit. I mean, I have real-world experience. You know, you may have heard me talking about being, you know, robbing the amateur Uber driver. You know, these low-wage jobs actually cost people money to have. It's certainly been my experience. You know,
I think what I've learned.
Go ahead.
What the pandemic has taught me, and probably a lot of other people. People have moved home, become multi-generational homes. People have learned that somehow they can still get by. But at the same time, you know, if I'm out there in an unsafe world, we got the maggots still don't want a shot. Don't want to wear masks, want people back serving them, but they don't want to make sure that there's a safe workplace for the people who are working. They don't want proof of vaccinations. They don't want to show proof of a negative COVID test. So we just have this chaos that's really, you can't sort it out. But the people say, you know what? I'm going to come back when I'm ready. But to be fair, everything right now is really uneven. Yes, a lot of people are vaccinated or have one shot. But when the jobs come back, you know, your small town is still going to be small town jobs. It's not going to be. Okay, let me try to put it this way. New York State and California are not even online yet. I mean, I think one opens May 15th, maybe in June 1st, in June 15th, something like that, depending.
Yep.
So that's going to be where the main economic activity is going to come from. Florida and Texas, two big states, but they've been open pretty much the whole while. You know, if you can't. You know, if nobody wants your $11 an hour job, hey, you got to push it to 12 or 13. You know, this is just basic economics. What's happening is the capitalist class do not want lower wage workers to participate in market rate wages. And what's happening right now, they're having to offer higher wages. And they don't want to do that. They think people are supposed to go back to work for $8 or $7. And people are just like, you know what? You know,
Ain't worth it.
Like with my mom and dad. Yeah, but I'm making it. Me and my kids with my mom and dad or my uncle, my cousin, we're living seven to a house now. But guess what? I don't have to work myself to death. And I can still chill. I can watch some TV. I can have a barbecue. I don't have to run from this job to that job. And people are reevaluating work.
And let me share something with you, Georgia, that Flavio directed my attention to a little bit before airtime, and it just kind of gobsmacked me. I said last night that, you know, with South Carolina and Montana starting by saying we won't accept further federal unemployment aid as of, and I said, and you watch, every other Confederate state will be right there in short order, and lo and behold, it didn't even take 24 hours, but, and so Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, et cetera, have all done the same thing, and they chose a specific date for cutting off their participation in the extra $300 a week. They chose June 19th. Juneteenth.
Juneteenth, yeah.
They're not even hiding it anymore. They are the new Jim Crow. And they're proud of it.
Well, hopefully the Treasury can still send people their money. This is the issue I have with John Roberts and his thinking. When the federal government does something for the American people, it should be even amongst all states. It shouldn't be dependent on whether you live in New York, whether Medicaid is expanded or not. This is why everybody has such an uneven understanding of what's going on throughout the country. Here you've got states that have expanded Medicare. I lived in Louisiana, so, you know, once John Bel Edwards became governor, Democrat, he was able to expand Medicare or Medicaid. And, you know, hundreds of thousands of people are able to see a doctor, you know. But it shouldn't depend upon your legislature. It shouldn't depend upon your government.
It should be a human right.
It should be a human right, but if it's federal, it's federal. But John Roberts is a tricky one.
Yes, oh yes.
He's a partisan. But he's going to try to give it some kind of legitimacy, whatever he does, which pisses me off.
Yeah, it's a veneer.
Because it undermines... Yes, a veneer. It undermines the progress that we're trying to make. And I hope to God that Biden, Pelosi, and Schumer get this voting thing under control and get it done. That one, it has to be done.
I agree, and then we come back to my least favorite topic,
Joe
fucking Manchin. I mean, you know, I get the acid reflux just thinking of his name, okay? The idea that 350 million American people are being held hostage to this not too terribly bright person who knows the cost of everything and the value of nothing.
Absolutely.
Drives me absolutely batty. I mean, as far as the employment situation is concerned, you know, we have the PRO Act that's out there awaiting passage, and Joe Biden wants to sign it, and it'll make it easier to form unions. I was again listening this morning, and I heard, you know, people won't go back to work. They won't. Okay, here's a deal. I got an idea. Let's have everybody go back to work, and then let's have a giant national strike. And because that's the only way we're ever going to have a serious conversation about wage equity across gender, across ethnicity,
wage equity. Fair day's pay for a fair day's work.
Yes.
And I don't see it happening otherwise. The Congress is never, at least not as it is presently constituted, is never going to take the minimum wage and make it and tie it to, oh, I don't know, the consumer price index, cost of living, but tie it to something where it cannot be used as some sort of political weapon.
Well, you know, the Chamber of Commerce has had its way for a long time. And it's not just the Republican Party, it's also the Chamber of Commerce. So they're really pushing this get back to work thing. And but you know, they started it, like you said, with Lindsey Graham last year, which is why they didn't renew the unemployment insurance support. People went 6 months without the added, well, it was $600 at that point, but it was only for 13 weeks. So from July 31st through the rest of the year, they were just getting regular state unemployment. So, you know, this kind of thinking that people have had at least $300 extra per week for over a year, it's just not true. They started getting the money again when McConnell allowed the passage of the last little support act to go through. And, you know, that started like the first week in January, I guess, for 6 weeks or whatever. And then Biden came in with the rescue plan and extended it to September. But it hasn't been continuous. I don't know why people are acting like people at the lower rung can't make good decisions for themselves about work. It's okay if somebody wants to pay me $1 million to be CEO over here and I'm making $300,000 and it's fine for me to go somewhere else or demand more money. But God forbid somebody making less than $10 an hour say, hey, you know what? My labor has value too. I mean, it's like a seller's market and a buyer's market. Sometimes it goes the other way. And right now it's on the labor side. And they're doing everything they can to make sure they don't have to come out with an extra dollar an hour or whatever. I'm just going to say this. America really right now, and like I said, I don't understand if people really realize it, what's going on in this country. But we have the world on our back. If you think about all the spying powers, the nuclear weapons, all of the capabilities this country has, and if it falls into the wrong hands of people, unscrupulous, who don't care about anybody or anything, and you can look at a Matt Gaetz and you can say he's clownish, but
no, he's
the kind of person who doesn't give a fuck. Can I say fuck?
No, you can say, you can say it. You can say it all day long and twice on Sunday here.
He doesn't give a fuck. And the Republican Party has said, we don't give a fuck. As long as we're in control, you can rape all you want. You can do what you want. Yeah, we'll play piety on the TV, but we don't care. And to live in a place like that, it's very terrible. And I'm just going to say this too. I don't understand people on TV acting like you can take Republicans at their word. Donald Trump is not holding these people hostage. Republican Party is very crafty. They are using
They like where they are.
Right. But they're using him as an excuse. Donald Trump isn't doing anything. He's playing golf. He doesn't have the drive or the attention span to do anything on his own. This is a wonderful crutch for them. They don't have to create a reason why they're being assholes. They can let you say, in your mind, they're afraid of Trump. But they're not really. It's a symbiotic relationship. Trump is really silent. He really doesn't care. But he wants donor cash. And, you know, they want to pretend and play to the base that, hey, they've got Trump's back. It's all P.T. Barnum.
It absolutely, yeah, it is. And they and they know where their bread is buttered, and they're getting and the rubes are giving them a lot of butter, and they know that they know that as long as they've got a Joe Manchin doing their business for them in the Senate, they don't even have to take the heat of just how awful they are. And so and so you know you manipulate the ability of people to vote, and that's the only way that this tired old rump of a white supremacy party continues to function. I don't know about you, but I'm sick to death of the fangirling over Liz Cheney. She's being hoisted on her own petard. She fostered and nurtured this godforsaken fascism, and now it's eating her. And that happens, you know, with the rise of the Third Reich. Hitler's right hand man, for a while, with the Sturmabteilung, the SA, was Ernst Röhm. And one morning, Ernst Röhm woke up all dead because the monster had come for him.
Yeah, I say to myself in the morning, you know, I turn the TV on. I watch your filthy morning habit as well sometimes. And I'm like, has the day come when they get rid of Cheney yet? You know? I mean, they're lionizing her, and I'll give her a pat on the back. Yeah, you're standing up, and that's great. And I'm not going to turn anybody away who's doing the right thing, whether it's for the right reason or the wrong reason. So I'll give her that. But the media gives Republicans too much deference and too much power. And they never really call it, and I know it's probably kind of, you have to say it's opinion if it's opinion, but they draw conclusions all the time when they want to.
Sure.
It's time to start calling it. It is fascism. It is anti-American and anti-democratic. And they're trying
When the leader of the Republican Party, when the highest ranking Republican in the Congress now says it's time to move on from January 6th. Excuse me? We haven't even started having trials. We haven't had convictions. We haven't had any sentences imposed. The investigation isn't even over. And the minority leader of the House of Representatives, Kevin McCarthy of California, is saying it's time to move on. I personally think that's because he thinks that he knows that he might well be swept up in it, that the monster may come for him. I mean, there's plenty of examples. I mean, look at the assassination of Trotsky. Okay. Look at Jean-Paul Marat and Robespierre in the French Revolution. It can happen to them. Well, you know, it can happen to these guys too.
Yeah, it can happen to these guys, but I don't think it's so haughty the way that what will happen to them. The Republican Party has been protected. Now we know, we've already assumed that he was protecting Trump. But to the extent that he was protecting Trump, you know, came out, I guess, a week or a couple weeks ago. They don't want to be held accountable for anything. This is what we're dealing with. But they're going to want Democrats held accountable. They're going to want Black Lives Matter held accountable. They're going to want anyone who's not under their umbrella held accountable. But we're going to have to toughen up and hold Republicans accountable. Now, Trump has skated, but I said he was going to skate anyway. just because people just don't have the fortitude to bring the president, well, unless it's a Democratic president, but to bring him to his knees like that. Now, there are still maybe some other things going on. Who knows how that'll shake out, since it's not federal, most of it anyway. And who knows what's going to happen in the Garland Justice Department. I mean, right, but it's a hot potato. Nobody really wants to, you know, to bring it up. But at the same time, if we don't put this, stamp out this Trump, Putin, Russia, NRA, and however else the underbelly is, what how deep it is, and put it, it's going to come back against us. It's not going to come back against them, because they're all in cahoots. And I just don't know that Americans have that fortitude. They don't know that. I think, as a, you know, Democrats and independents and Americans have lived relatively well. I mean, some better than others, of course, but comparatively speaking, well, for the last 70 years. They're not really used to that kind of, sometimes you got to come together and push back against that enemy, and all other things can fall into place after that. And we're in that break glass moment, I think. But we, I don't know that we're equipped to handle it, Bob. Robin, sorry about that.
That's okay.
But I just don't know if we're equipped to handle it.
I don't either. But the problem is, you never are. It's kind of like, oh, having a kid. If you wait until you're ready to have a kid, you will never have a kid. And that's an entirely facile analogy, but I think it has a certain amount of aptness, because great change seldom comes from peaceful determinations to change. Positive change is birthed in conflict. And you know, I'm not saying war, but it's never easy. It's like, as human beings, we don't learn from doing stuff right. That's just called routine.
Yeah.
We learn from screwing up and hating ourselves and going, Jesus, I'm never going to do that again. Oh, please let me learn from that.
You're right. I'm hoping we can surprise ourselves. I'm getting committed. I'm just like, man, thinking about maybe starting a pack to do something about voting, and, you know, maybe raising money to help local people get people out to vote. It's going to be a mess for 2022, but we've got to hold the House and the Senate. I mean, it's a 50-50 Senate, but we've got to hold. We've got
a
hold.
Yeah, I mean, we have to start with goals. Goals are protect and expand in the House, and co-equal with that is to gain enough seats in the Senate to render Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema irrelevant. And then we also have to be prepared to, if we're going to sow the wind, we have to be prepared to reap the whirlwind and fight and fight like junkyard dogs. If we ever get to the point where we can get rid of this monumental manifestation of non-democracy, the filibuster, this racist, et cetera, non-democracy, the filibuster, we're going to have to fight like junkyard dogs to make sure that the Republicans never get control of the Senate ever, 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 ever again. Because it will be hell among the yearlings. And, of course, they'll do what they did anyway. If the filibuster exists and the Republicans get hold of the Senate again, they'll do what they did. They'll get rid of the filibuster. A piece at a time.
And why can't Manchin? I mean, wait a minute. I don't understand Manchin. You just lived through McConnell pushing judge after judge doing absolutely nothing. Even, you know, we had a little fragile recovery, Trump opening too soon. wouldn't put more money in people's pockets, held on to the last minute. Only reason why McConnell moved was because those two Senate seats were on the line. A measly $600 going out to Americans, but he did it because he wanted the Senate seat. You push Amy. Okay, I can't say it. Your girl, Amy.
Yeah, my girl. You talking about Justice Handmaid, Amy COVID Barrett?
Yeah. You push this woman through. I mean, Ruth Bader Ginsburg wasn't even called 10 days, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, what is wrong with Joe Manchin? Come on now.
He's them. He's Georgia. He's them. You know, you're probably too young to have ever read the Pogo comic strips, but that classic comment by Pogo where he said, "We have seen the enemy and he is us." That's Joe Manchin. He's them. He's they. For the most part, he's down with what the Republicans want. And Steve in New York says, "Oh, dear, Georgia, Georgia, Georgia. Joe's entire constituency is Joe." And
well, I take you guys' word for it.
It's pathetic, and it's something I deal with on the frustration, at least I deal with every blessed day, because I feel like somehow it's my fault. I mean, I've left Senate races blank on a number of occasions, not cast a vote for him when I knew it didn't matter, but it mattered the last time because the guy who had the Republican nomination against him, as hard as it may be to believe, would have been infinitely worse. This is the guy who helped bring the opioid pandemic to West Virginia, Patrick Morrissey. So this time, I cast a vote for him, and I feel this really gross sense of culpability.
Well, he's better than the alternative, like you said. So hopefully, you know, Biden, you know, he knows the man. He can get to him. Somebody has to get to him and send him. I mean, if they just need to be persuaded and see that Republicans are not going to play ball, the way Mitch McConnell says, no votes, we're not helping, we're dead weight. You know, this is about, I mean, if people can't vote, you don't have a democracy. I mean, that is just as simple as that.
Yeah, well, what did Stalin say? I don't care who votes, I care who counts the votes. Wasn't that Stalin?
Yeah.
And let me add a voice to our conversation here, Georgia. Let me bring Darlene. Okay. Let me bring Darlene in Connecticut in. Hey, Darlene.
Hey. Hey, Georgia.
Hey, Darlene. Hi.
Is this the first, Robin, that there are three women at one time on the horn?
Remember, that certainly hasn't happened since the big coming out of December 31st.
Awesome input, Georgia.
Thank you.
And you know, Senate Rules Committee meeting on For the People's Act still going on. So you talk about the Republicans being able to get away with everything, not being called out on anything. That was on display during this the still ongoing Rules Committee hearing, when we're seeing a situation where I'm quite frankly sick of it, with how Republicans just dumb down the discourse. I'm sick of it. It's like they bring nothing to the table except conspiracy theories and, ad hominem attacks against Democrats. It was interesting because Angus King, who is an independent, called out that, you know who, Ted Cruz, for doing that. It's like, you know, why are you engaging in these? Why are you personalizing it? Let's hear something substantive on this. And it's like, I'm so sick to death of it. And you're right. They just continue to, continue to dumb down the discourse, and they project and accuse the Democrats of the very things that they are doing. And you're right. We need to have uniformity, or, you know, it's that dirty word, right? Federalizing things, because everything is so disjointed and it's state by state and there's no uniformity. So this For the People's Act has to do with trying to smooth out the voting rules, because what we're seeing in Georgia and other states. And thankfully, Ossoff is on that rules committee. And you've got Mitch McConnell.
And he ate Ted Cruz's lunch today.
Oh, yeah. And he also ate Mitch McConnell's lunch today, who, you know, and again, you know, bringing in the Supreme Court with John Roberts, who's as dastardly as they make them. He's a big part of the problem here. The politicization of the Supreme Court.
You know, I think what people have to remember with Republicans, maybe they were conservative at one point, I don't know, but for most of my adult life, Republicans are about inaction.
Party of no.
They don't want to get anything. They don't want to get anything done. Nothing. So, you know, if you... it's a different group every time. It's black boys with their pants slouching. So, you know, you go through, there are all these bills, be them localities or municipalities or whatever. You got to criminalize sagging pants. It does nothing for people. It hurts people's pocketbooks. And then it's gay people. Mexican. It's always somebody to demonize, so they don't have to do anything for the people. If they can't serve people,
so they don't have to confront the evil that they themselves do.
Right, and they keep people divided. And I know you're giving credit to Ossoff, and it's well deserved. But Amy Klobuchar, you know, she dished out some pretty serious pushback by talking about how, you know, instead of trying to squelch voting rights, maybe Republicans need to improve their ideas and go back to the drawing board and look at why they lost in 2020. And also with what Georgia was saying about how the United States has, is carrying the world on its back, that's already been proven. The devastation that, you know, if power gets into the wrong hands, we already saw that for the past 4 years with Trump. That this one person can wreak havoc and devastation across the world. And just looking at the pandemic itself, I was thinking about it because I can't remember who it was, if it was AOC or somebody had talked about the statistics are showing that women have taken a serious hit from the pandemic. How women who have advanced in the working world, and I'm one of them, we built businesses. I have neighbors, women who have built businesses. We've been set back probably 2 decades because of this fucking pandemic at the hands of who was in office at the time, a misogynistic, grabbing by the pussy motherfucker, Trump, who hates women. So whether he was conscious of it or not, which I don't think he is, that came, I mean, his destruction was widespread income. you know, worldwide women basically have been set back from their accomplishments that they have been able to make for the past couple of decades. So this is devastating, and we've already seen what happens when power gets into the hands of the wrong person in the United States. So, you know, Georgia, you're right. You know, who we elect into that Oval Office has worldwide implications, but you're wrong in the sense that it's already happened. It's already happened and maybe you know, I mean, I'm sure you know that it's already happened in the sense of we have somebody in office who's trying to rectify it, who's trying to correct it. Again, another white male, but I guess we have to take our saviors where we can get them.
Truth.
As far as Joe.
Go ahead, Georgia.
As far as Joe Biden, I don't know if people say this, but, you know, Joe Biden was nobody's first choice.
Nope.
But he was when the little old black ladies voted for him in South Carolina, they understood something that maybe other people didn't understand. They understood that he's our white guy. And he's not a white guy that like Bernie Sanders that's going to talk about economic equality, even though that may be the end result, but that makes white people angry. And that makes them vote against their interests. And black people have gone through that, I guess, like with Mondale, Dukakis, so, you know, you understand, you want those things. The things that Bernie Sanders talking about, black people want that. But they also understand that when you are overt like that, it makes white people angry, and it makes them come out and vote like a Reagan landslide for the other guy.
There's also the issue of the devil you know.
The devil you know. But hang on. Let me say this part. But black people get taken back further when you have somebody like Trump in office. So whereas a white liberal, their life is pretty much the same. Hey, well, we lost. And they saw this with Nader. They saw this with, with the Gore and Al Gore, Nader, and other situations. Well, I guess you could say with Jill Stein. Anyway, well, the point is, yeah, your life goes back to normal. Jill Stein's a millionaire. Susan Sarandon's a millionaire. You want perfection, but black people can't afford to have perfection at the expense of today. Their lives can go back to servitude. You know, that's what you're talking about. So it is incremental, but Joe Biden is—he's a Democrat, and I'm pleased with what he's doing, and I think people need to understand that the reason why we have a right-wing country is because we can't seem to get two Democratic presidents in office back to back. It's a long slog. If we could have gotten after Bill Clinton, we could have gotten Al Gore elected. We'd be in a totally different place. But because right-wingers want it more, they're willing to throw salt in your eye, pull hair, or whatever else, unethical and illegal, Brooks Brothers riots or whatever.
They're willing to get into the Oval Office.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They're willing to cheat.
That's what we're going to do.
Yeah, they're willing to cheat.
So we got to do something.
You know, they're willing to cheat and steal. I mean, I think both of you are right. I mean, it was Lady, you know, and Lady B kind of bashed me a bit because I, you know, criticized Robin and Bob at the time, Robin about Tara Reid, and you know, she came out and said, look, she was right when she said that, you know, Biden is the best choice because of his moderate leanings. And I don't even know, I don't want to speak for Lady B on this, but I'm not so sure that the black women that George is talking about that voted for Biden, the moderate, anticipated that Biden would surprise us all.
No,
on the progressive liberal streak.
Darlene, I don't think anybody saw this coming. But I do give myself credit for, and I'll say it again. The man does not make the person does not make the presidency. The presidency makes the person, if the person has any character at all.
Correct, but he hasn't been in long enough necessarily for that to have evolved. I think it was there. I think it was ready to come out. Look, he's 78. You know, this is somebody who has had a certain momentum in his life, okay, that is probably beyond what you and I have ever experienced to get us to the heights he's gone to, and it's taken him until he was 78 to become president of the United States. He's been watching this shit for a long time. He's been seeing how Democrats are piss poor on messaging and how Democrats have not really self-actualized and come through for the American people. But if you were to cycle it back 20, 30 years, that was a different Joe Biden.
Oh, Darlene, I'm in agreement with you. I think a President Joe Biden elected in November of 2016 is a caretaker president and an entirely different president than the Joe Biden we elected in 2020. Because
we can't fault Biden. Oh, excuse me, we can't fault Obama. Obama helped because he was critical in this dynamic. Because Biden, Obama to a certain degree was thinking of his own legacy, but he was, in a way, educating Biden into the president he is today. None of us saw that at the time,
and he couldn't say it out loud.
No, but he, you know, and he and like I've always said, you know, Biden. I'm worried about Biden's his judgment calls, because Biden was 100% against going after Osama bin Laden. Obama made that decision to go after him. Now, so maybe the two of them were a terrific balance, and those 8 years as vice president educated him into a whole other level. He learned, and even though we talk about Hillary Clinton being the most learned person, like the most experienced person to be able to be president, Biden clearly may have even been more so in his role as VP and hopefully the apprenticeship that we're seeing, because with Kamala Harris, I'm hoping that same type of, you know, wisdom accumulation is occurring in her, so that we have an excellent first woman president. Not only that, but a black woman president, and that he has enough of that kind of perspective to step back and say, "This is how I learned to be the president that I am now. I want to impart this on my VP." Because
I think maybe.
Okay. Go ahead, Georgia. Sorry.
I hear what you guys are saying, but I think, it's the moment, and Joe Biden is comes from a working class family, so the things he remembered, and he's listened, he's learned things. Of course, he's not the same person. But
no,
I'm not
is.
Really.
No,
I can't say that I'm surprised. Yeah, no one is. But I'm not surprised, because this is like for him, it's like the mentoring moment. Here he comes in. There's a pandemic. Well, first of all, the campaign was floundering. before South Carolina. If he didn't win South Carolina, he was done. He was done. Okay, so he makes the calculation. If I get in there, I'm gonna make some changes. And he understands. He's been in the Senate. He knows what's going on. He knows. The oppression comes in the tax code in this country a lot of times.
Oh yes.
Having lived in New Orleans, the regressive tax code in the state of New Orleans, the state of Louisiana is outrageous. But so he has an understanding for all this, but at the same time, he knows. Like you said, he's an older man. Let's make it count. But also, he's up against it. He knows what happened in 2016. He didn't make fanfare of it. Put out a statement, 2016, 2020, about the election meddling. It's out there. We know, at least we know definitively what happened. But he also understands that he can't make too much noise about this, that, and the other. That's why I'm giving him that room for the voting. He says it's going to get done. It's going to get done. I'm going to believe that it's going to get done, even though in the background I'm part of the peanut gallery. It needs to get done. So I think he's strategic in what he lets out. He's not on TV all the time, which is great. So I'm going to give him, and he's got good people in his ear.
I'd like to point out one little fact. I was actually pondering this the other day, and I went and looked it up, and my suspicion was confirmed. It's not really a suspicion, but and I think this may be telling. He's obviously a college educated man, but Joe Biden is the first president, the first Democratic president since Carter, whose mind was not polluted by the Ivy League.
Yeah, he went to a community college.
He got his BA at the University of Delaware, and he got his JD at Syracuse. And Syracuse is no slouch, but it ain't the Ivy League.
Yeah, and that's an excellent point. And of course, his recent visit with the Carters, with Jimmy Carter, was symbolic in many respects.
And even Carter, Carter was literally a nuclear scientist from the Naval Academy.
Right.
I think
Obama's mind was polluted.
I think
Michelle's was too. She went to Princeton.
Yeah, I think you have to go back to LBJ to get somebody who had somewhat plebeian roots relative to higher education as a Democratic president.
Well, maybe that's why, they're both pushing community college education.
I mean, it becomes kind of an interesting list.
Interesting. It does.
FDR, of course, went against type, but he was Ivy League.
And wealthy.
Harry Truman, not Ivy League. John Kennedy, Ivy League. LBJ. And so you seem to get the biggest populist changes, not counting FDR, or the pro-working class, pro-poor changes out of people like LBJ. And now Joe Biden. There might be a clue and a lesson both tucked away in there.
And it's hilarious because, of course, you have Republicans that are constantly going after, liberal universities, Meanwhile, flying under the radar.
Trump went to Penn, for Christ's sakes.
Went to where? I'm sorry?
Penn. Wharton.
Yeah.
Georgia, you were going to say something?
Oh, I was going to say, there crises happen. These crises happen when LBJ came into office. FDR was,
he came in on a crisis. Kennedy being assassinated, the civil rights movement, Black Power movement, and you just had an LBJ, a strong enough person to say, you know what, that's something that Kennedy said he was going to do. And I'm a Southerner, I'm a Texan, and, you know, I probably shouldn't, but I'm going to get behind it and get it done. And we're in another seismic shift moment, and a lot of things do have to change. This pandemic showed us that, you know, kids don't have broadband, don't have Wi-Fi in rural areas, in the cities. I mean, there are a lot of holes in this country that we didn't really, or some of us didn't know, but
it laid bare so the cultural and societal inequities. It laid bare those societal inequities. You know, on a rare occasion, I did a Todd from South Carolina and took one for the team and was listening to Washington Journal this morning. And, you know, the big controversy, you know, about how unemployment, you know, has made it so that people won't go to work, they won't go back to work. And, of course, you know, Washington Journal is always more heavily, you know, the nutcases are calling in. You know, they have one guy who's calling, makes $100,000 a year, and I don't know, it was Alabama or Arkansas or something like that, that they can't find people to work, and entry-level jobs are $50,000 a year. And because of the generous unemployment compensation, people are lazy, they don't want to go to work, and they're looking for, you know. And a woman called in who said, look, you know, what are they doing to make these places safe? You know, there's still a serious virus out there. You know, and that people want to work, that they derive, you know, a certain amount of self-esteem and satisfaction, you know, from contributing. But another person called in and said, hey, you know, this clearly lays bare the fact that that the worker has been grossly underpaid and that we've been subsidizing. One woman called and we've been subsidizing restaurant workers. They're only getting a couple of bucks an hour. Why would they go back to that? You know, and this is a seminal moment. You're right, Georgia. You know, it's like, what are we going to do about this information that's been laid bare? It's always been there, but it's like, it's in such high relief. What are we going to do with this? Are we going to take this and say, look, this pandemic taught us so much. Are we going to correct these inequities? Are we going, you know, and this woman that was talking about the restaurant workers and our subsidizing the restaurant workers and what she meant by, you know, with tips. She didn't talk about a minimum wage. She said, what about a living wage? And this may be one of those nexus points where, you know, Biden's looking at this and he knows that Democrats have failed, because in the sense that, and he's promoting it, maybe trying to work in increments. But I'm sick of increments. Like, I'm sick of Republicans dumbing down the discourse, the marketplace of ideas. You know, instead of saying a minimum wage, talking about a living wage, we should have been AOCing it from the get go and saying living wage. $24 to $27 an hour.
Well, and that goes, but that goes back to what I was saying about unions,
right?
For these Republicans who hate the minimum wage, you know, the libertarians and whatnot,
for these Republicans who hate the minimum wage, the best way to not need a minimum wage is for everybody to have a damn union.
Well, and what's leaping to mind right now is
they don't want a living wage. That's the bottom line. I read it probably 20 years ago now, but it was an essay that said that every Republican principle, it's kind of an economic 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, but every single policy that a Republican espouses or a conservative espouses will eventually drill down to paying people less, to low wage payment. They shouldn't be called the Republican Party or the GOP or the conservative. They're just the low wage party.
And this what leaps to mind too, though, is something that I think one of your best callers of all time, Sandra, who I hope is still listening to your program, and I'm sure you communicate with her. But I remember her saying, she always had these one-liners that came out that it's like, I never forgot them. But she said, the unions are not messaging well. There's something wrong there where they're not, you know, and again, it's the Democratic Party generally. They're piss poor on messaging. You know, the unions, they need to do a better job at messaging.
Well, there's an element of truth to that, and to add the quantum of that, Darlene, in Georgia, Rick Smith is the best pro-labor voice in this country today, period, bar mm-hmm. none.
Mm-hmm.
And he will not mince words when he talks about the sort of paucity of messaging talent in organized labor. The other part of that, though, is that they are in a messaging battle against a behemoth. I mean, if you look at the recent Amazon fight, the union messaged for all it was worth, but you can't compete against an employer who is given the right to hold its own workers hostage and make them listen to anti-union diatribes literally the entirety of their shift.
Yeah, Jeff Bezos took a page from the Walmart playbook.
Exactly.
And that's being called, you know, and there are some voices that are trying to call that out.
In this state, the court has ruled, as a worker, you do not have the right to walk out of an anti-union meeting hosted as a condition of your employment. You don't, you know, you have, technically under the First Amendment, you have freedom of association, but you do not have the obverse or converse of that, to wit, freedom of disassociation. You can't sit in the meeting and say, "Boss, I got boxes to pack. I got shit to do. You pay me to work, not to sit here listening to your anti-union shit. I'm going back to work." Because you're not going back to work. You're going out the door because you're fired.
And they also need to, you know, Democrats need to head off at the pass as somebody who is who's self-employed, okay, and. And they try to make it sound sexy by calling a gig worker. Like, where the fuck does this come from? You know, like you're the Rolling Stones or something. You got a gig. No. That's not what it is. It's hard work when you're self-employed in this country. They fuck you over. They fuck you over. There's very few unions. There's very few protections for somebody that's in my situation, which is an ever-growing group of people that, you know, were raked over the coals in terms of being our own employers. What we have to pay in Social Security far exceeds what we're paying in regular taxes into our government, okay? And when they want to sit there and say, pull yourselves up by your own bootstraps, rugged individualism, entrepreneurship. It's a crock of shit. It's a crock of shit because they penalize you for that. They want you to be enslaved to a boss, to a corporation, to a business. They don't encourage that kind of thing.
It's
get the lucky few. The Bill Gates, the Elon Musks, the Jeff Bezos that maybe hit something just right, like a lottery. Okay, and are like billionaires and can write their own checks, basically. But what really makes this country run is the cumulative factor, which I'm sure you learned about in law school, like I did, Robin.
Yeah.
The cumulative factor, right?
What were you saying, Georgia?
Oh, I was just going to say, capital has won in this country.
Yeah.
There's nothing else. There isn't another tax cut to be had. The wages can't really go any lower. They've won. But I think there is also an opportunity. And I think you saw this when some of the companies did come out in support of, against these anti-voting laws or these voter suppression laws. And that is, we're doing fine. We don't need this extra stuff. And some of these battles, these battle lines that were drawn in the 80s, or really during FDR's time, that in the 80s pretty much and further on, in the 80s and further on, the Republicans have pretty much in Capitol, Chamber of Commerce, they've won. But that doesn't mean there's any movement for give. And I challenge people, these companies, they make money in Europe. You know, the European countries, they have their summer vacations. They have a certain amount of time off, maternity leave. And, we don't even have paid time off in this country. But, I challenge these people. I say, you give these other countries and their workers these things and you support it, and they have a higher level of living than we do, and you fight us tooth and nail. I don't get it. I think that there's some appeal there, that some movement that we can see in the next 5 years or so, I think.
They're going to have to elevate everybody, unions, gig workers, everybody. There's no protections for gig workers. And you've got a problem when you have somebody
The gig economy.
You have somebody like Elizabeth Warren saying, I'm a capitalist.
But the gig economy needs to go away. It needs to not exist. Cab drivers need to be cab drivers. Not people desperately running the wheels off their own vehicles for pennies. And
what do you propose then? Because I sure as all hell am my own boss.
Yeah, but I know, and I mean no disrespect, Darlene. I don't see you as a gig worker.
I bust my ass. No, I'm not a gig worker. But that's how they trivialize it. Like it's somehow sexy. Like it's somehow, it's really cool. I'm a gig worker. It's hard work, and in many respects, my clients own me. They do.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I'm scrambling at this point because I'm so desperate with the situation with the PUA, the pandemic unemployment. I'm trying to get a contract that is going to pay me three or four times less than what I'm worth. After 25 years in the field that I'm in, that is unacceptable to me. But at this point, I don't have a choice. I can't stand it. I fucking can't stand it. But that's where I'm at. If I want to pay the bills, I have nothing to fall back on.
No, I used so, to. I used to joke that my retirement plan was the, you know, Powerball.
Yeah, me too. So we've got big problems.
I was going to say wage theft.
It's all of that stuff. And you know, and this kind of goes to what George is also was alluding to in terms of Republicans. It's a scarcity mentality as well. You know, this idea that there's not enough to go around. There is plenty to go around. As long as it's not hogged up or that, you know, they act as if, you know, all, you know, there was plenty to go around when they gave those huge tax breaks during the Trump administration. That was deeply unpopular. It was unpopular. But all of a sudden, they can't help people in a, you know, once in a 100-year emergency situation with this pandemic, which may be, you know, I fear may not be once in a 100-year event. All of a sudden, they want a nickel and dime. That's a disgrace. That's a disgrace.
I agree.
And, you know, I am heartened to hear, you know, despite all the static and the noise, you know, that Biden's policies and ideas are popular by a majority of Americans across the country, which, you know, looking at the numbers, has to include sensible Republicans. I guess there's still a few of them left.
Maybe.
But because he's a white man, maybe he can get it done. He can get it done because the people are not offended hearing it. If it's coming from a black person or a woman, it feels like, I guess to some people, it feels like you're giving somebody something extra or, you know, they're getting special benefits or something. I don't even understand that. I mean, but, you know, hey, I'm black, so I don't know. People just get this idea that somebody is taking something away from them. But they don't understand that when we all prosper, we all prosper. It's not at your expense. I could give a heck less if you've got a $500,000 home. If I'm happy with what I have over here, it's only when people feel like they're clawing and they're not getting anywhere, and this is the Republican trap. Republicans are going to never give you anything. That's the thing. And they're going to say Washington, even though they run most of the states. Washington's the problem. Democrats are in charge. It's their fault. But they're never going to do anything good for their red state, the states they run.
But if a Democrat does something good for them, they will then go and take credit for it.
Yes. Yeah. They'll sit there and say, we voted against it. You know, and that was something, I think it was in the hearing, Senate rules hearing, where Cruz had the audacity to ask King if we vote for this, or if you vote for this, this amendment that we're, you know, will you vote for the full bill or something? It was like, they flip the table when we know, you know, like when we saw that with the rescue package, Republicans were making all these amendments, and most of them were shot down, but there were a few that were agreed to. They still voted against it, still voted against the bill, yet they're running back to their constituents and saying, oh, this is helping you. It's so cynical and gross and vile. And it's like it needs to continuously be pointed out, but like screamed from the hilltops, because it's sort of a subtle voice in the undercurrent of the din.
Well, yeah, you know how I am about messaging and making a soundbite and everything. It would have been nice. I think it was Senator King said, Senator Cruz, I will bring in a crate
of Bibles for you to swear on that you will vote for this bill if we give you your amendment. Will you so swear? Because, you know, he's a good Christian, Ted Cruz.
Well, I mean, we're talking Angus King as an independent.
Oh, okay. I know. But that goes back to your conversation about messaging.
Right. It goes back to that. It all boils down to that. I mean, maybe Ossoff could have done that. Maybe it would have been great if Warnock was on that committee. I don't think he is. Right? I don't know. Is he a senator or is he a representative? I can't remember.
Raphael Warnock is a Democratic senator.
Okay. Would have been wonderful if he was on that committee.
But John Ossoff is, and I don't think you can have both. Isn't there a rule against having both senators from one state on one committee?
Right. But it would have, you know, your idea about, you know, swearing on a Bible. he's a reverend. That would have been fantastic. That would have been, at minimum, you know, great showmanship.
Senator Cruz, I have Dr. King's Bible right here. Ready to swear?
Oh, jeez. Yeah, so here we are.
What was that, Georgia?
Yeah, this is a little off topic, but I'm going to ask this question.
Sure.
Why does Rand Paul hate Dr. Fauci so much?
I mean, Dr. Fauci. Because Dr. Fauci's a real doctor, and Rand Paul is a libertarian ophthalmologist. That's why.
Oh, my God. You know what? That's a great, you know, oh, geez, Georgia. They should do, like, a montage of their interactions and just do, like, just an hour-long montage of their back and forth, because Fauci, as much as he hates Fauci, just pummels him and destroys him like he did today. I'm like, okay, oh, good. I want to see this hearing. You know, I mean, Susan Collins, annoying as fuck, she got slammed, too. The CDC director, the lady there, oh, she just pummeled Susan Collins in the smithereens. And Susan Collins, her head and body were shaking more than normal because she had no comeback. And it was like, oh, you know, I'm out of time, but I want this article put into the record. And, of course, Murphy there was like, oh, you know, no objection. So, you know, I think it was something from the New York Times, something or another, about how the CDC is mixed up by this messaging and everything else. Yeah.
Well, there was another moment though.
Georgia, it's two old white men engaged in a pissing match. Who can piss the furthest? That's just my take on it.
Yeah,
and clearly Fauci.
And prostates being what they are, well, it probably isn't that far.
Well, you know, Rand Paul is relatively, I mean, come on, Fauci's almost an 80-year-old man.
Yeah.
I mean, Rand Paul is being very disrespectful, number one. He is like a rabbit. And, I mean, he just comes out of the gate. I mean, he's like, when Fauci's there, he's like Jim Jordan on somebody. I mean, that's how wild and out of control he is. I don't get it. I don't know. And you think, like, the next time it's going to be different, but it never is.
No. There's a consistency with Rand Paul.
Yeah, Rand Paul is the Jim Jordan of Louis Gohmert's. But the other thing is he's so privileged, and the idea of people banding together and doing for the common good is antithetical to his libertarianism. Because remember, we're all lone wolves in libertarianism, and we're all pulling ourselves up by we're either hauling ourselves up by our own bootstraps or our own bra straps. One way or the other, we're hauling ourselves. Because, you know, we're not in this together. We're in it all by ourselves. And if it turned out that the American people banded together to stop a virus, that's pretty much the end of libertarianism. I mean, I think. But the other thing that came out of that hearing that I found, frankly, disturbing, is the return of the it was engineered in a laboratory in Wuhan racist argument. Because
right,
that came back with a vengeance today. Some freshman jackass from Kansas. And then I think Rand Paul, too.
Well, it was this whole thing about, and I don't know what this means, but what Fauci said, really, quite frankly, Rand Paul could not gainsay, because, you know, Fauci basically said, we want to look at this lab. We're not going to overlook this. We're going to look at, we want to look into what this lab was doing. He's not sitting there and saying that they had manufactured anything or spread anything, but he's being diligent. But there's this whole thing, and again, it's term of art. It's all this shit that can be skewed. It's nuanced. It's fine distinctions. It's esoteric stuff. When he talks about this thing called gain of function research in China, I have no idea. I haven't had a chance to look into that. What the fuck does he mean? This is what Rand Paul was talking about, gain of function research in China. Fauci said, I don't favor that. So we're sitting back looking at this, and, you know, I consider myself fairly informed, highly educated and intelligent woman. I don't know what this gain of function thing is. I didn't train in the medical field, but it's this very, it's a term of art, and it's esoteric. So Rand Paul can sit there and twist it and make it seem like it's something.
It was probably something that was invented by the Black Lives Matter and the Antifa. I mean, come on, this is the world we live in. And I just got a news story. Agnes just sent it to me to go back to, you know, our present freak out. And Georgia, I don't know if it's happening in where you are yet, but it's definitely happening here. And I don't know if it's reached you, Darlene, but Virginia Governor Ralph Northam has officially declared a state of emergency in Virginia because of the shutdown of the Colonial Pipeline. Because Virginia gets some a great deal of its gasoline from that pipeline, fuel generally, and people are flipping them out in Virginia. And I, like I said at the beginning of the program, I was already hearing, well, ain't got no gas, it's a shell and no kill. And I wasn't even paying attention to it. I just pulled in into the Rippy Mart, and all 12 pumps have a car at it. I'm like, tourist season really is getting started early, isn't it?
Well, it's like...
And
it's
then
like
they turned the light on for me and said, yeah, we won't have gas for much longer.
Yeah, it's this panicked, you know... What they, you know, like how some Americans act during Christmas, right? Before, prior to the pandemic, people rushing to get the cabbage patch dolls, you know, that
kind
of thing.
This is toilet paper on steroids.
Right. It's a consumer economy on steroids, and everybody's worried, and so they're rushing to get gas. I mean, you know, I may have to have an oil fill up because we've had a kind of a chilly,
shitty spring.
Yeah, and you know, we've had some very nice warm days, but it's been trending more towards chilly. And I'm like, I think I'm going to have to do another fill up of my oil, my oil tank, my furnace, to get my furnace to run at the low ebb through the summer into October, and I'm dreading to look at the price, the gallon price, and don't think for one second that I have family members who have been one in particular who I gave hell to the other morning at 6 a.m. I woke up so pissed at him. He's somebody near and dear to my heart, but you know, he was bashing Biden and saying, you know, everything's going up. Gas is going up, and this is going up as soon as Democrats get into office. And I'm like, excuse me, do you realize what we've just been through for the last 4 years? That almost 600,000 people are dead because of the orange asshole that was in the white.
Oh, it just, it continues. I mean,
you can't talk sense to these people.
No. And I just found out today, because, you know, we're in this big redo of the bathroom that was, you know, it wasn't by choice, it was by necessity. And so I have to figure out something to do the wall. And I thought, okay, I'm just going to try to do it cheap and dirty. And I'm just going to get that stick-on plastic, like, splash guard stuff and do the wall in it. And everybody who, all the home improvement guys are going, oh, you stupid. Yeah. But that's not going to happen. Because it's $10 a square foot.
Yeah.
This stuff that you just peel and stick. It. And it's $560 to do my crummy little bathroom. And it's, you know, like I said before, $75 a sheet plywood. Holy hell.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to get materials.
Because everything, the entire global supply chain is screwed.
Yeah, and everything is taking far longer.
And David in South Carolina, Stan, sent me a story saying that behind the scenes, the Biden administration is pissed about this colonial pipeline thing.
It's funny because Republicans have immediately twisted it to somehow be a verdict on what Biden wants to do in terms of diversifying our energy system, whereas I would think it would be highly supportive of having, you know, a diversified energy system in terms of wind energy and solar energy and everything else. I would think that would be supportive of doing those things.
Yeah. And I just wanted to share a couple of notes along the way too. Oh, and thanks. I need to send out thanks to Ralphs. Ralphs knocked down the fundraising goal for this evening down to let's see. Oh God, Cyphron.
Hey Ralphs.
924. And so, or I mean, 824. So it'd be great if we could get finally get Friday finished, and that's $224 away in 22 minutes. But thank you. Thank you so much, Ralphs. Ron in Raleigh wrote in and said, here's the deal. A large number of white Americans will vote against a bill that supplies relief if they believe some of that relief goes to people of color. Because, as is always the case, they're deserving. Anybody they don't like isn't deserving, and that's the truth. Jeremy in Vermont said, Georgia, Rand Paul hates Dr. Fauci because Fauci is smarter and calmer and not a fake doctor with a thing on his head. So I think
exactly.
Yep. He hates him for his haircut. And and Steve in New York said, what do you think of this? Because you were talking about if only Raphael Warnock had been on that committee. What do you think of this? For every committee that Ted Cruz or any other Christo-fascist is on, assign Raphael Warnock to it. He can bring the actual Christian perspective. I'd love to hear him preface his comments with this. As the pastor of Ebenezer Baptist Church, ..
That'd be fantastic. And I hope, just to kind of go back to what started everything off, I hope you and Andy the Angry Jew can come to a modus vivendi over what's going on. I don't want to even step into it, but obviously what's happening has really struck a nerve with Andy, and I'd hate to lose his perspective.
Yeah.
From the program, because it's so valuable and viable, and I never in a million years would ever say, Robin, that you have ever said that Israel shouldn't exist. You've always spoken highly of the Israeli people themselves, my mind was going back to when you were reading what Andy was writing. Was it Isaac Rabin who was assassinated? Was it Isaac Rabin? Yeah,
yes.
Which was, I think, a seminal moment and a tragedy. If he had survived, we might be in a very different place right now. And I think of his granddaughter, who was crying about her, you know, her grandfather losing her grandfather, which was so heartbreaking at the time. And I think it was a radical conservative Israeli assassin or group, you know, that killed him.
Yeah, it was. It was a hardcore right wing Israeli.
And it was. It just to me that was an enormous loss from my recollection. And again, I wasn't as politically schooled as I am now, but I just remember, I said, this isn't good. And, you know, I come from kind of a, you know, I have family members who you could plug down in the middle of Palestine and they could pass for Palestinians. I told you I have a nephew who literally looks like Mohammed bin Salman. He's like the spitting image. I'll send him photos and say, why are you dressed like this? You need to behave. And he would laugh at everything. Like his father was trying to get him to shave his beard. He looks so much like him. But I also think I've been told that I look like I'm Jewish. Okay. And was it Ron Farrelly who made the crack about the Russian Jews?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that was sarcasm.
You know, which was sarcasm. I actually believe or think, it hasn't been proven yet, that my Russian maternal grandfather was Jewish, that he fled Russia because it was during that time of World War II that he came over. And I just have this I don't know, this just, it's in my genes sense that he was a Russian Jew and that he fled here to the United States. And of course, when I asked my mother, you know, we never talked about it. We never asked those questions. So my cousin from the same maternal grandmother as, you know, he went over to Russia because he was doing research on our ancestry. He actually physically went to Russia to find out about him. And the record keeping is so piss poor in Russia, there was nothing we could find. And I've been told, I worked for a Jewish community center, even though I am technically, I'm not Jewish from what I know in terms of the documentation. I've been told by people who are Jewish, you look Jewish. You have the schnoz for it. That's what one person had said to me. I've been told you look like you're a European Jew. I've been told that when I wear my hair up, I look like Ruth Bader, like a young version of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. So I feel like I'm kind of at the nexus in understanding this stuff. You know, it's just a very weird thing. But
well, there's really
Andy.
Yeah, go ahead.
My sense with Andy is that somehow this has really struck a nerve. What's happened in Israel has really impacted him on a very deep level. And we hear you, and we hope
yes.
that you'll still continue to participate.
Yeah,
and
I didn't get angry about it. That was all more in sorrow than in anger, darling.
No, I never said you did, and I think that tensions are running high for a lot of good reasons.
But that's also part of me trying to be a better person. I mean, not, that's not
well,
not me
I don't,
tooting my
I
own
don't,
horn. But.
Look, you know, Okay. And I know this is going to sound really awful, and maybe on some respects, but I have a good friend who is part Jewish. It's confirmed. It's in her lineage. And she has been very adamant. She's pissed off at Israel. She said, the Palestinians, it's a concentration camp. And I'm not going to gainsay it. She's Jewish. She said, it's disgusting. It's a concentration camp. They are doing to the Palestinians what the Germans did to them. And she's right. She's right. And I would like nothing more than for the Palestinians and the Israelis to make peace and get along, for them to apologize and come to, you know, like I said, a modus vivendi and live peacefully. Arabs and Jews can live peacefully. They do it in Israel. They can do it.
Yeah.
And I know the situation is so complicated. Exactly, and we had a Muslim woman come to my local library, and she was talking about Islam. There was a Jewish woman there, and she was 100% in support of. And they got along great. It can happen. It can happen. But I agree. I think that President Biden might be in the best position to call Israel out, Netanyahu. And you know what? Biden knows. He knows better, because I remember Obama saying he didn't like Netanyahu. He couldn't stand him. He said, you don't have to deal with him.
Oh, I got to share a couple of things. As we're running out of time, but I got to share a couple of things because this is too rich. Because of what's going on in Israel, statement by Donald J. Trump, 45th President of the United States of America. And I only share these for their comedic value, okay? This is not serious policy. This is just the low comedy of a pratfall, okay?
When I was in office, we were known as the peace presidency. No, they weren't. Because Israel's adversaries knew that the United States stood strongly with Israel, and there would be swift retribution if Israel was attacked.
Huh? Of course, you know, I remember when Andy sent me the story of a Jewish cemetery in, what, St. Louis, being vandalized by a bunch of maggots.
Under Biden, the world is getting more violent and more unstable because Biden's weakness and lack of support for Israel is leading to new attacks on our allies. America must always stand with Israel and make clear that the Palestinians must end the violence, terror, and rocket attacks.
The Palestinians didn't kill any children this time.
And make clear that the U.S. will always strongly support Israel's right to defend itself. Unbelievably, Democrats also continue to stand by crazed anti-American Representative Ilhan Omar, among others, who savagely attack Israel while they are under terrorist assault.
You're right.
He actually named Ilhan Omar.
Yes.
He put a target on her back, motherfucker.
Yeah, he did. It's stochastic terrorism, and he knows if the others know, even if he doesn't, and he does, because he revels in that effect.
He's a psychopath. What
he's doing.
Congratulations, because
this is just pitiful. This is the ramblings of a demented old man dribbling into his bowl of oatmeal. Okay.
With two scoops of ice cream and chocolate cake. Congratulations to Martha's Vineyard in Massachusetts for the privilege they will have in looking at massive windmills that have been approved by the Biden administration and are being built in China, of course, China, as part of an extraordinarily large wind farm. Wind is an incredibly expensive form of energy that kills birds, affects the sea, ruins the landscape, and creates disasters for navigation. Liberals love it, but they can't explain why. In any event, Martha's Vineyard, an absolutely wonderful place, will never be the same. Good luck.
Yeah, imagine all the dolphins that are going to slam into them, and all the albatrosses that are going to get killed.
Yo, and the massive. Yeah,
actually call them windmills again?
Yes. Yeah. Sparky's kicking furniture even as we speak.
He actually called them windmills.
They're windmills, yeah. And they ruined my golf course. I will never forgive them. And they give you windmill cancer.
Oh, Jesus. At least we can. Oh, jeez. At least he's consistently fucked up. Oh, my God.
Well, I mean, that was probably after his third 30-foot rail of Adderall. So what do you want?
I mean, the only thing we can take some solace in is that he can't necessarily, you know, summit there and, you know, what is it, tweeting or whatever it is.
Follow me on Etch-A-Sketch.
You know, it's like he's dissolving into insanity because he can't really get it all out into Twitter.
Yeah, no kidding. Thank you, Jeremy. Jeremy just jumped in and got us down to $800. And then and thank you. Wow, thank you, thank you to our anonymous friend for a Have a Show on Me. And so that means we got down to $500 to finish the evening. And that's huge. I cannot tell you how huge that is. That means we're done with last week. Chunk of Monday. And yeah.
And I'm sorry, Robin. I wish I could.
No, Darlene. I know. No.
Been, but you
please
know
don't.
My
no.
situation.
Yeah. Don't apologize. You've been an absolute pillar. And you need not apologize. So I mean, I'm sorry. I'm sorry to spoil all the seriousness with a. But. You know why.
With some levity?
Yeah.
You got
a laugh to keep from crying. My God. You know, I had the story last night about the model in Yemen who's going to be virginity tested, because those are some great people, too. But every time I point out this barbarity in another foreign country, I know that there's going to be one out of the United States. And so just to kind of wrap things up, Jesus Christ, really? A mom got thrown out of Six Flags in Oklahoma Stan because the authorities determined her shorts were too short.
Like how short? I mean,
she was, and they called the cops on her.
They called the cops on her.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Meanwhile, I have a cop going by my house. What? Okay, and they responded.
And she's got her little girl with her. The girl is bawling. They're being thrown out of Six Flags.
Sure, let's traumatize a little kid, of course.
Yeah, I mean, and maybe these good Christians in Oklahoma would like to pass out burkas because Six Flags has you must be appropriately dressed, and we do not accept clothing that's offensive. So I guess a young mother showing too much leg is offensive to the folks at Six Flags?
Wow. Okay. I don't even know where to go with that.
What,
I mean,
Georgia?
I guess, you know, hopefully they don't have any tennis courts and women wearing little tennis, you know, tennis skirts when they play, because those are pretty short. But I guess it's context. I don't know. But I would say Six Flags can maybe this is where the consumer can maybe have some power and just, you know, boycott Six Flags.
That, it's atrocious.
It's ridiculousness.
Georgia, what?
I was going to ask, you know, after being shut down or semi-shut down for a year or so, and America is opening back up, are you shocked by the barbarity of our society?
Well, no.
I mean, you know, but, like the thing you're talking about, the short. I mean, but a lot of this stuff, it was quelled because people are at home, or limited mobility because, you know, everything is you know, limited hours. Now that we're opening back up, it's a shooting every day. It's
that's a good point.
It's crazy.
Yeah, the opposite.
But you just become numb to. Yeah, you just become numb to when it's every day. But now that we haven't really experienced a lot of that stuff because of the pandemic, it just seems like we're nuts.
Well, and on top of it all, this woman whose name is Bailey Breedlove, she's on the spectrum. She says, "I was walking to my boyfriend. I'm autistic. I have a hard time talking to officers. She followed me, yelling and calling for backup. And now she was not only thrown out of the park. She was banned for 5 years from Six Flags.
5 years." What crime did she fucking commit?
Girl in two short shorts. So every time there's some obnoxious story about a woman being, you know, compelled into a beekeeper suit, and we go, oh, those barbarians. Just remember, there's also Oklahoma and Alabama.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Do they have a water park there by chance?
Well,
I think they do, right?
I don't know. What if somebody
walks in there wearing a bathing suit?
It's a Six Flags. I don't think there's water slides. I mean, there might be a log ride or something like that, but no.
Yeah, some log ride. I mean, not anything you do swimsuit, but you know you're
going to
get wet.
Yeah. I rode the log ride at Six Flags over Georgia. And at Opryland in Nashville, you know, you get soaked, but it's hot and you know, you're all sticky and it's nasty and wet and then you get dry and then you dry off over time. But, you know, the vision of her little girl scared to death and sitting there shaking and crying.
Is that the thing, if you go, separated from her mother that we saw at the border when Trump was president.
But I mean, the thing is, if you go to Gap or Old Navy or whatever and look online, what she's wearing is no different than the denim short shorts that are for sale there, or for sale in Walmart. I mean, do they need to come with a warning? May offend Oklahomans. May offend Six Flags over Oklahoma.
Was she white?
Yes, and blonde.
Interesting. Was
and she
was her
and
boyfriend she, black? I'm trying to find something else.
I don't. She wasn't behaving like a Karen.
That probably was the problem. Is she wearing a mask?
Yes.
Oh,
and so is the child.
Mm-hmm.
And she's wearing a. Maybe it was the T-shirt. She's wearing a Pikachu T-shirt. And Pikachu's little blush circle cheeks are over on the sides of her breasts. I got nothing.
I got nothing either. I'm trying to figure it out. Was her, again, her husband or boyfriend wasn't black or something? There had to be something else that was just, you know, the trigger besides the shorty shorts, but...
And the cop said, if you don't give me your ID, you're going to jail. She said, if I give you my ID, I know I'm going to jail. It's ridiculous.
That is ridiculous. They got nothing
we
better
too
to
much
do than
jail in this country. You know?
What?
Too much jailing. It's too much jailing in this country.
Yeah.
Over everything. I mean, it's like an old lady forgets to pay for something out of Walmart. She's got dementia or whatever. You break her arm. And I mean, this country is insane. We have good points, but there's a lot of insanity here.
I'm actually still debating it in my mind. I saw something yesterday evening in a convenience store. Saw a guy pocket a can of Coca-Cola. And you know what I didn't do? Run up and say, dude just boosted a can of Coke. Because in pandemic America,
Don't be a snitch. Don't be a snitch.
Yeah.
But...
No.
Well, you know, thank you for piping me in. Georgia, wonderful to hear from you and chat with you. Thank you for your insights. It's awesome.
Yeah, this is the first
Take
time we've
care.
Done something like this. It's been a blast.
Absolutely.
I enjoyed it, man. It was good for the soul.
Anytime, Georgia, and you too, Darlene.
Yeah, Georgia. Call in anytime, Georgia. Love to hear from you more often. It's a treat.
Will do. I'll call in whenever I can.
Whenever the spirit moves you, as they say. Anytime. Thank you both so very much, and I hope you both have a wonderful evening. Time for me to roll out of here and get the upload started, and et cetera, et cetera. There's a little bit of daylight left. I don't know. I might do something on the griddle. Who knows? But thank you all for helping out this evening. Thanks to our anonymous friend. Thank you to Jeremy. Thank you to Joey and Giraffe, and thank you to Ralphs. Thanks so very kindly. Thanks to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers, partial sponsors of the program. Thank you to our a la carte contributors so very, very much. Thank you to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky in the chat room. Let me double check there. Thanks to Sparky. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Remember, brand new Fresh Malloy on the way at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And remember, this would be a great time if you haven't before, or if you haven't lately, call your member of the House of Representatives and ask them to co-sponsor H.R. 2073, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, AIC. It would mean the world to Appalachia. And of course, always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Please stay safe. Get your vaccine as soon as you can. In the meantime, and even if you have, continue your precautionary behavior. Wear your mask. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Carry hand sanitizer wherever you go. Maintain your social distance among people who aren't vaccinated. And if somebody comes toward you saying, "Them short shorts is too short in the name of Jesus," avoid that person like the plague, because they are. Later.